Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC, and we'll end today by opening the phones for artists to talk about permission to tell someone else's story. Have you grappled with this in your writing or visual art or anything else? 646-435-7280. If it's true that most art draws from real life experiences, then have you ever used another person's real life to inspire your art? Did you ask for permission from that person before you started the project, or after, or never at all? And if not, how did you reconcile that? Do artists get to use any source of inspiration they want without asking first? What are your guidelines for yourself? What kind of blowback have you ever gotten after the fact? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. Why are we bringing this up today? Well, largely because of the piece titled, Who is the Bad Art Friend? Who is the Bad Art Friend? That was in last week's New York Times magazine, as it happens, and it's being shared a lot. It's a true story about two female writers who run in the same literary circle. One donates a kidney, posts on Facebook about it, and the other woman writes a story centered around the post. And it gets more complicated after that, but at the core, the piece went viral because it deals with the moral dilemma around how artists treat their muses, their sources of inspiration. So, wondering if anyone falls on one extreme end of the spectrum, do artists need to ask for permission in every case? And if so, or if not in every case, at what point do they, should they, have you? 646-435-7280. And what about specifically using material found on social media posts, which some view as informational and not having, quote, market value, and therefore might be in the clear when it comes at least to some of the legal issues? So give us a call. Tell us about your experience. Maybe you've been on either end of this as the artist or the unintentional muse. 646-435-7280. And there are so many examples, right? With or without permission. According to The Guardian, James Gandolfini, who famously played Tony Soprano in The Sopranos, routinely called the writing staff of The Sopranos vampires because of the way they poached actors' lives for material. Here's another one from Barnes & Noble. Severus Snape from the Harry Potter series was inspired by J.K. Rowling's chemistry teacher. Apparently, the teacher said he was horrified when he found out. So, artists and intentional or unintentional sources of inspiration alike, when is it okay to people to use people's lives for art? Have you ever been on either side of this? 646-435-7280. And we'll take your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So I know somebody who says they went to see a play written by a former romantic partner, only to realize that the character of the ex in the play has a lot of their characteristics. Have you ever been in that experience or anything like it? We're taking your calls now. For artists about permission to tell someone else's story, or those of you who might have been in the friend's position about giving it. So let's see. Sheila in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, how are you, Ryan?
Good. You have an experience.
Yes, I do. I was in a writing group, and we would all collectively talk about what we were working on. And we were working on various things for, you know, short plays, web series, sketches, et cetera. And I went to a sketch show and saw that another person in my writing group had taken several of my stories and put them into their sketches.
Oh.
Before I even finished my own work using my own stories. And I kind of I confronted them, but not really, and that I said, like, how do you feel about, as a group, us talking about things? And she said, well, once you say something, like, it's up for grabs. Like, nobody owns it then, because it's out there in the world.
Wow.
And so we can all do something with it. And I was like, oh, okay.
So, but this different, even a little different or a little beyond the examples that I was talking about in the intro, this is like plagiarism adjacent, right? Because you were using these stories for your work.
Yes. Yeah. I hadn't finished mine yet because I was working on a longer project.
Yeah.
But she took, you know, bits and pieces of what was going into my work to put into her own sketches. And I was like, I don't think that's right at all. Like, just
and I guess the shocking thing is that the leader of the writers group, if I'm hearing it right, said that's okay.
Yeah.
Sheila, thank you very much. I'm going to get some other folks on, but thank you. I'm sorry that happened to you. Jonathan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jonathan.
It's a quick story. My prom date is now a well-known writer, and I ran into her on the subway a few years after we were no longer prom dates, obviously. And the encounter wound up in a story of hers a few years later, and I was very tickled by it. There was one little detail that I would have preferred not to have to confront, but other than that, I was quite pleased and flattered to see myself in there.
But only you and she knew, or would you say that's not the case?
I suspect if any of our close circle of friends, some of whom we keep in touch with, saw it, there would be enough of a description. The description was clear enough to identify me.
Jonathan, thank you for your call. Marlene in Long Island City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, how are you, Brian?
Good.
It's great to be on.
And I see you've been on both sides of this, you told our screener, right?
Yes, I've been on both sides of this. So the first one that happened was I was photographed by a photographer, a professional, it was supposed to be a gift for me for doing something for her. I never received the gift, but years later, a friend of mine sent me a catalog from Florida from a college, and my photograph was in there as one of the teachers in the school. And I realized this was the photograph that she had taken and she never sent to me, and it was used without my permission. And I was very upset. And you know, I really didn't have any contact with her any longer, but it was very disturbing to me. And I thought, if she had asked permission, I probably would have said yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not given.
And you don't want to be surprised by it, right?
Exactly. And the other side of it, and I read the article that you were talking about, and I felt both sympathetic and not sympathetic. I felt outraged by the fact that she never really requested, you know, to use the story from this woman, you know, or to even suggest to her that I was so moved by your story that I wanted to respond to it, even negatively. But I, on the other hand, she did change it, and she did do it from her own perspective, which I guess was another way of dealing with that. As a writer, I've also written a story that was based on a true experience of mine with a friend. And I wrote about it, but I didn't share it until he died.
Ah, so you waited.
You waited. Yeah.
Did you consider...
I shared it with his wife after he died.
Did you consider asking for permission to publish it? Was there a reason that you thought you might not get it or he might not want to be asked?
I think it was a very sensitive time, and it was about illness, and I didn't think he'd want to read it or even hear about it.
Right. And what about his widow, then, hearing about it or reading about it?
I think she appreciated it, yeah.
Marlene, thank you. Thank you so much for telling us both of those stories. How about Max in Borum Hill? Max, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi. I'm so excited to be on, and I called the other day. I couldn't say this, so happy belated birthday. I was in a play. The last play I did just before the pandemic hit was a play that was written and directed by the person that I was portraying. So it was kind of an interesting experience of being in the room with the person, and it was mostly a verbatim play of interviews that he had done with his mother as she was sort of declining into dementia. So it was a very emotional piece, but it was interesting because he was pretty hands-off with my performance. He kind of let me do what I did, and I didn't really do an impression. I was just trying to live it as a character, but the stranger thing was when his family was there, his brother, who was also a character in the play, and that was kind of a nerve-wracking experience to a certain degree.
Yeah, so you were playing the playwright and director of the play, and so obviously that person knew you were portraying them, but was there something then where it threatened to cross a line into appropriation or anything like that?
It was something that I sort of wrestled with in how I was wanted to approach it, because there was a certain impulse to maybe do an imitation in some way.
Yes.
Which did feel like potentially appropriation, but also not doing any of using any of his sort of mannerisms or anything also felt like maybe I wasn't honoring his story as his story.
Right.
It was a complicated sort of wrestling match.
And I guess if you wanted to interpret the character maybe a little more darkly than the playwright saw himself, then you'd be intimidated about making that choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Fortunately for me in that circumstance, he was very generous with his own story and letting me sort of explore my own journey through his words.
Right, as an actor.
So it was a good experience, but it was a little fraught internally.
Max, thank you very much. Megan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Megan.
Hey. Crying, my heart is pounding. I listen to you every day, and I've never called before. I have sort of a three-pronged approach to this. I could talk about this topic for hours. I'm so glad you have it on for all of the artists
here. And let me just warn you that we have 60 seconds left in the segment, so go for it.
I got you. Okay, so this is a hip-hop story, as we all know this. This genre uses a lot of different other people's music, but they usually shout it out in a subtle way. So I do think that with hip-hop, there is a way of appreciating the roots, you know, where you get your music from. My husband makes music, and we have argued, because I went to art school and appropriation was always something that I was against. But listening to the way that he uses the music and shouts out the roots of the music,
right?
Kind of, you
to
know,
sample
it,
something
it
and give
so
credit famous. To give credit
to give
in
credit.
One way or another.
I also think it's a little generational. That's my third problem, because I think younger, you might be okay with it, but I'm old.
Megan, thank you very much. And thanks to all of you who called on this and all show. The Brian Lehrer Show is produced by Lisa Allison, Mary Croak, Zoe Azoulay, Amina Cerna, and Carl Boisron. Zach Goddard-Cohen works on our daily podcast, Juliana Fonda, and Leora Noam Kravitz at the audio controls.